Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, February 17th, 2015, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. We are still in the process of gathering members of the Crystal Soul Group for our next Starseed Crystal Quest in Arkansas, which is May 10th through the 16th, ending with Pleiadian lineup. This group is identified by having at least one of these six astrological star markings, either 25, 26, or 27 degrees of one or more of these six signs, Capricorn, Cancer, Aquarius, Leo, Taurus, or Scorpio. If you feel the call of the crystals but aren't sure if you have the required markings, just send an email to crystals@starseedhotline.com with your birth info, the date, time, place, as well as your current location, and I'll be happy to take a quick look at your charts to see if you're part of this soul family and send you more details if you are, because we only have a handful of spots left. Our guest this evening is Miriam Knight, author of What Wags the World? Tales of Conscious Awakening. Miriam was a senior business executive who made a midlife shift onto the spiritual path. Upon moving to the U.S. from England, she published a holistic journal for 7 years, then founded the New Consciousness Review, and the website link for that is www.ncreview.com. A review magazine and website that showcases the people, books, and films inspiring personal and global transformation. She also hosts an award-winning weekly author interview show that provided the foundation for her new book, What Wags the World? Tales of Conscious Awakening. When mystical experiences occur, people awaken to a more humane worldview and a burning passion to inspire personal and global transformation. What Wags the World? Tales of Conscious Awakening is a topical and compelling collection of conscious awakening stories from 37 individuals from many different walks of life. A native of Venezuela and citizen of the world, Miriam has lived on four continents and speaks four languages. She has a bachelor's degree in Romance Languages and Psychology from Boston University and an MA in Psychology from the University of Virginia. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseeds that you won't hear in the mainstream media. And we would like to thank Claudia and Vanya for hosting the switchboard this evening. We also have an online Starseed community at starseedhotline.ning.com, and special thanks go to Tammy for her dedication to the forum. You can download our show podcasts on iTunes or right from our Blog Talk Radio episode page. Just look for the cloud with an arrow icon. The toll-free number for starseedhotline.com is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions for people and pets are also available with Tammy. And if you have a birthday coming up, don't miss out on your 10 hours of power. You can find out when that happens by requesting your solar return timing. So first this evening, I would like to introduce Anastasia. Hello, Anastasia.
Well, hello, everyone. Great to be with you. What a week this has been. And frigid temperatures all over the country. It has been a real trial, but it's great to be back to the Starseed News. Before we start tonight's news, I want to be sure to thank Hope for her solar storm video, and Audrey for her clouds video, and Barbara for her links. I love all of you. Thank you for contributing to this newscast. Well, the sun is flatlining. Now, for the fifth day in a row, according to spaceweather.com, solar activity remains very low. No sunspots are flaring, and the sun's X-ray output has flatlined. NOAA forecasters estimate a scant 1% chance of X flares and a 10% chance of M-class flares. Venus and Mars are converging for a beautiful close encounter in the sunset sky. On the 21st of this month, just a few days away, the two planets will be so close together that sky watchers might lose Mars in Venus's glare. In just that amount of days, the two planets will be dramatically closer together. Their minimum separation on February 21st is only 4 degrees, less than the width of a full moon. Now, the night before closest approach might be the best of all, because on February 20th, the crescent moon will pass right by the converging planets. Mark both dates on your calendar, sky watchers, because the western sky at sunset will be very dramatic, assuming, of course, you don't have clouds and you can see the stars. And the current moon phase is waning crescent. It's 2% of full. We have some news out of the University of Rochester about a special star. Astronomers from the U.S., Europe, Chile, and South Africa have determined that 70,000 years ago, a recently discovered dim star, probably passed through our solar system's distant cloud of comets, the Oort cloud. Now, no other star is known to have ever approached our solar system this close, 5 times closer than the current closest star, which is Proxima Centauri. Now, they analyzed the velocity and trajectory of a low-mass star system, and they named this Schultz's star. Wow. Big old wow. Star came real close, right through the Oort cloud. Well, in Japan, they've had another very major earthquake. There were tsunami and evacuation warnings following a 6.9 offshore quake in Japan. It struck off the Honshu Island in the northern part of Japan, according to the USGS. The quake was recorded at around 8 in the morning at a depth of about 10 kilometers. They say that it extended all along the coastline past the Emori Prefecture. And they said that there was a tsunami warning issued, and they expected that the waves could have reached 3.5 feet high. They issued an evacuation order, and thousands of people left their homes. But they say, according to the nuclear facilities there, that there were no irregularities reported at nuclear plants. Well, here's news that everybody is either living or has heard of. But the record-breaking winter in Boston has brought 16.2 inches of snow during a blizzard. 16.2 inches of snow in one storm. That makes this winter the city's third snowiest on record. I understand as of this night, they're planning on maybe making second or first the all-time high. Blizzard conditions have reduced visibility to less than a quarter of a mile with 35-mile-an-hour winds for over 3 hours or more. This affected largely the areas of Plymouth, Hyannis, and Martha's Vineyard, very popular destinations for tourists. Not a nice time of the year to be there right now. So the next push of Arctic air is expected to bring air that is even colder, and this is going to occur the rest of this week. It's going to challenge record lows. In fact, Lexington, Kentucky today had a record snowfall of all time, broke all historical records over 12 inches. They say records may also fall across parts of the southeast. They're going to go into the teens and single digits, even down to Florida. They will experience lower 30s as far south as Orlando. And wind chill temperatures, of course, will be below zero. That will be common along the 95 corridor. So they say that the values would even drop as much as 20 degrees during the overnight hours. So we just need to bundle up. Think warm thoughts. And in the South Africa coast, along the South Africa coast, red tide has been discovered to kill 2,000 tons of lobsters. The harmful red tide algae off the west coast of South Africa killed all of these, well, actually 200 metric tons of the west coast rock lobster. The wet red tide was detected early in February. It's causing a high weekly toll in lobster loss. That is hard to say. That's one of those tongue twisters. You try saying lobster loss in a newscast and see how you do. Okie doke, we'll just move right along over that one. I kind of, observer of spaceweather.com, they often have really beautiful photographs of auroras, and you see beautiful greens and blues and turquoise and those types of shades, but there's been an odd display of red auroras over Manitoba, Canada, and red auroras are not fully understood. And they were photographs of that on the internet, and they're really quite beautiful. It was a rose, really deep rose fading to pink. Well, they occur, they say, some 300 to 500 kilometers above the Earth's surface. They happen much higher than the regular green auroras. Now, some researchers believe that the red lights are linked to low-energy electrons from the sun, which move too slowly to penetrate deeply into the atmosphere. Now, when such electrons recombine with oxygen ions, red photons are emitted. So at present, they say they can't predict when more will occur, but it is a rare thing, and they have been in a vivid display over Canada in the past few days. Well, you know, what do you expect to happen to you when you live in Surprise, Arizona? Two people were driving along a road. This is from the Arizona Republic. Two people were driving along the road in Surprise, Arizona, when they ran into a sinkhole. And they were injured. It dropped the car down into this huge sinkhole. They had to go to the hospital, and it did force an overnight road closure. Now, sinkholes are still happening all over the country, all over the world. I don't report about it all the time, but normally there's reports of sinkholes just about every week. This sinkhole was off of Grand Avenue. Those of you who know about Surprise, Arizona, say it was as wide as a lane of traffic, and they are still attempting to repair the damage. No cause of that sinkhole is known. But two people got a surprise in Surprise, Arizona. I'm sure they weren't hurt too much. And in Taitung City, Taiwan, there has been a large earthquake, magnitude 6.2, that occurred on, actually it was on Saturday, Valentine's Day. And in the North Mid-Atlantic Range, just off the coast of Greenland, there was quite a large earthquake of 7.1 that occurred also, well, actually that was 13th of February. So the day before Valentine's Day. So we've had a 6.2, a 7.1, and that big one in Japan. A lot of activity going on, fairly good sized. Well, let's take our sights over to New Hampshire. I want to talk about cold. I know. I'm stating the obvious. But following a series of record-setting snowfalls, New England on Friday got a new metric for how severe its weather's been because the town of Alton, New Hampshire, called off its annual ice carnival due to a forecast calling for more snow and brutal cold. They were expecting 0 degrees and blowing snow, and the officials in the town felt people wouldn't have a good time at the festival. The carnival typically draws about 1,000 visitors to the frozen lake for games and rides, but they had to give it up. Just too cold for the ice carnival. In Sao Paulo, Brazil, people are having to begin to ration water. They're in a drought emergency. We've talked quite a bit on this program about our own Southwest drought, which we're going to talk about again momentarily. But in Brazil, they have really had a time of it. And it's been an opposite experience of extremes because in December, they were hit by extreme flooding. It caused flash floods. They had a deluge. Well, it was the wrong amount of water in the wrong way because it did nothing to alleviate their drought. Less than 2 months later, as of today, it is the worst drought in Brazilian history, and Brazilians are hoarding water in their apartments. They're drilling homemade wells and taking other emergency measures to prepare for forced rationing that appears likely, and they say will leave the taps dry for up to 5 days a week because this drought is so monumental. Now, in Sao Paulo, the country's largest city, has a population of 20 million people, and the reservoir is at 6% of capacity, with the peak of their rainy season now over. They say more than 4 million people have been affected by rationing and rolling power cuts as the tropical nation of Brazil discovers that it can no longer rely upon abundant water supplies. Now, protesters in dry neighborhoods have taken to the streets, coffee crops have been hit, businesses have been forced to close, and boat operators have had to cease operations because the lakes are all dried up. At least 6 cities in Brazil have been hit by blackouts due to weak hydroelectricity generation, and the government has acknowledged on Thursday that Brazil is now importing power from Argentina to try to cover their serious shortfall. Mm. And in the Near East, Israel, Palestine, Lebanon, and Egypt, a raging sandstorm swept into Israel, Palestine, and Lebanon. It caused the worst Israeli air pollution in years and whipped up huge waves in the Mediterranean Sea. The storm was made up of accumulated dust from the far reaches of the Sahara Desert in North Africa. It also engulfed Cairo for a second day. the Environmental Protection Agency in Israel said air pollution levels were the worst in many years, and flights were temporarily grounded due to the weather, the sandstorm. And as I promised, we're going to talk a little bit about the drought in the southwest United States. A new study says that the southwestern U.S. could be set for its worst drought in 1,000 years. Numerous states, as you know, have experienced severe water shortages, with 64 million people affected. Now, researchers say things could get worse. Studies by scientists using computer models, however effective that might be, are saying that the U.S. could be in for its worst drought since the 12th and 13th centuries. Now, Ben Cook from NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies helped write this paper, and he said that Americans may have to get used to droughts as a way of life. He said the past mega droughts during the 1100s and 1200s persisted for maybe 50 years at a time, and they were droughts that no one in the history of the United States has ever experienced. He said the droughts that people do know about, like the 1930s Dust Bowl, are expected to last only a few years or maybe a decade at the most. But he said the current California drought could go on for another 20 years. And bear in mind, that is from a computer model. And, in fact, if you watch the Weather Channel or other weather outlets, they're using computer models constantly that are always wrong. And that's encouraging. Well, you know that beautiful feeling you get when your breath is taken away by an expansive view of the ocean, or your mind gets swept up in the swell of a piece of music? Well, that feeling is awe, and it may be your best defense against harmful inflammation in your body, according to research published in the journal Emotion. These researchers found that feelings of awe in response to nature, art, and spirituality have been linked to lower levels of pro-inflammatory proteins called cytokines. They say that awe, wonder, and beauty promote healthier levels of cytokines, and it suggests that the things we do to experience these emotions, whether it's a walk in nature, losing oneself in music, beholding beautiful art, has a direct influence upon health and life expectancy. Now, the researchers suggest that this happens because awe represents, guess what, the opposite of stress. Awe is also associated with curiosity and a desire to explore, suggesting antithetical behavior responses to those found during inflammation, where individuals typically withdraw from others in their environment. So, Starseed listeners, there are many ways to experience awe. Get out into nature, listen to music, and bask in spiritual emotion, which our Starseed are very good at.
Mm-hmm.
And a giant UFO has been spotted over the Arizona mountains. Two Arizona residents claim to have seen the famous Phoenix Lights, a 1997 event you all remember in the Southwest's long history of sightings. Now, this couple, Carrie and Jeff Zacharias, are residents of the town of Goodyear near Phoenix, and they believe they saw the famous lights on Tuesday over the Estrella Mountains, which is a regional park in the area. This was a video on the Internet. I saw the video, and I have a comment about that at the conclusion of this paragraph. They said, quote, "From our viewpoint, it was kind of like a headlight, but hovering." They told this to ABC News. Now, the couple says that, despite the strange sighting, they don't believe in UFOs. But sci-fi and paranormal writer Alejandro Rojas certainly does, as we know. But he dismissed the recent observation. He said, those are believed to be flares dropped by the military. Now, Luke Air Force Base officials confirmed to the news outlets that they were conducting training that night involving the use of flares. Well, if you all want to Google UFO spotted over the Arizona mountains, you might want to take a look at that and see what you think. But I have to say, I want to ask you when you see it, what sort of flares keep a clear formation with horizontal movement? Well, I think that the Air Force and the officials and the news media can do better than that. This is a very impressive video, completely reminiscent of the Phoenix Lights, and surely, from my humble opinion, that was no flare. You need to check that out. It's quite a picture. Very interesting. Well, our quote for this week. The greatest weapon against stress is our ability to choose one thought over another. And that comes from William James, the famous existential psychologist. It's a wonderful thing. I thought of you when I read that, Ariel, because that is what you live and teach. The greatest weapon against stress is our ability to choose one thought over another. Lavendar does the same. She teaches us that, too. So let's remember that, folks, when we come into this cold weather and this hardship. Let's choose to be thinking of beautiful things and spring, and let's not get pulled down into the moment. Well, that's it for tonight. Now, tonight's show is going to be fantastic. This is very exciting. Miriam Knight's going to be a wonderful guest, so I'm looking forward to it.
As am I. Well, thank you so much for the Starseed News, Anastasia.
You're
always
certainly
interesting,
welcome.
Interesting and fascinating stuff that you find. And
well, I want to wish, just give love to all of you out there and just say peace be with you. And you're in my heart, and we'll talk again next week.
Okay. Bye-bye. So I will need a little bit of help from our switchboard hosts, Vanya and Claudia, because I don't have any power this evening. So I'm kind of working here in the blind. If you have Miriam on the switchboard, can you please open up that mic?
We do.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Carol.
We're opening up her microphone now.
Okay.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Miriam. Welcome to the show.
So are we doing this show by candlelight?
I am.
Oh, lovely.
I am. You know, I was able to dig out my old corded phone, which still works without electricity. So the phrase starseed troopers comes to mind. And that's what we're doing tonight. So, Lavendar, are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. So you take it away.
Okay. Miriam, I'm so happy to have you on tonight, and I love your book. Your book, What Wags the World, Tales of Conscious Awakening. And let me tell you how I use the book. I just kind of hold it in my hands and go, one, two, three, what do I need to know today? And I open it up, and sure enough, it'll go to a story on those two or three pages that just really hits home of what I'm working on or what I need to know for that time. So welcome, Miriam, and tell us, what gave you the idea to do this book?
Well, hello, Lavendar. Actually, I'd never heard of anyone using it that way, but it's fascinating. I'm glad it's giving you good information. You must be well connected to the universal mind. So what gave me the idea? I have been interviewing authors and reviewing books for about, I don't know, 15 years. And most recently with my radio show, you know, actually interviewing the authors intensively. And when you get so many books for review, you see the waves of information coming through. There are kind of clusters of things. And we've been getting a lot of books about conscious awakening lately. So I picked out what I thought were some of the best stories among them. And I was specifically looking for people who were really, really credible, you know, feet on the ground. We're not looking for this. It happened to them. And to tell their stories. So I asked them all the same three questions. Was there an event in your life that changed your view of the nature of reality? What was the insight you got as a result, and how did that change your life? And then, do you have a message for the reader? And it was really fascinating to get these people from such different walks of life, asking them the same three questions, getting very different answers, but then starting to see the threads of similarity run through them.
Okay, I noticed that you have listed in here all the authors by name, and I just now noticed Meg Blackburn-Losey, who's a guest of ours quite often. So you've written about her in this book, which is a wonderful story. And then you have Nina Brown. I'm very, very impressed, and Greg Brayton. I'm very impressed at the people that you got to come on with your book. It's great. How did you pick the title?
There was a wonderful quote that I had read a couple of years ago from the book The Once and Future King by T.H. White. And it talks about the wizard Merlin giving some advice to the young King Arthur, who was kind of moping around and feeling sad and bored. And Merlin tells him that the best thing for being sad is to learn something, learn why the world wags and what wags it. And I just thought that was delicious, and I thought I would adapt it.
Well, it's a wonderful title. And what do you mean by conscious awakening?
Conscious awakening is kind of a catch-all term that has as many meanings as there are individuals. But each one expresses their conscious awakening in their own very special way. For some of us, it could be turning on to visualizing other dimensions, hearing things, seeing things. But for others, it could just be a realization that we are really all connected, and the decision to be more conscious in one's choices in life, to buy things that are environmentally sustainable, to volunteer, to just act more consciously and more connectedly in your life.
I know that you've had some high strangeness and some paranormal experiences. Would you mind sharing some of those experiences with our listeners?
High strangeness, I love that. Yes, in fact, one of the things that I am hoping for this book is that readers will acknowledge all the little events of high strangeness they might have had in their own lives and put them into place. You know, when these things happen to you, your first reaction is, oh, that's just my imagination. Or if it really gets to you, you're thinking, oh my, if I tell anybody, they will think I am crazy, so I better not say anything. You know, so you just kind of file it away and try to ignore it or forget it. And what my contention is, and what the burden of these stories is that the universe is always in conversation with us in many, many different ways, in many different planes and dimensions. And it's up to us to open up our receiving channels and listen to the incoming messages. In my case, what really, really got my attention was when a good friend of ours killed himself and then started trying to connect with my husband during sleep to try and get a message through to his son. And this had the effect of blowing my husband open psychically. Now, you know, when it happens to somebody really close to you, then you kind of raise an eyebrow, but you take it at face value. And so we started reading everything we could about mediumship and afterlife and psychic phenomena and channeling. And that really blew our minds because we were both very, very left-brained corporate types. My husband was a lawyer and a merchant banker. I was a VP of finance of a multinational corporation. It shifted us. We both did this midlife shift onto what I would call the spiritual path. We both became healers. My husband became a hypnotherapist, and I became an energy healer. And then when we moved from England to the States, I ended up publishing a holistic magazine. So that it really did create a major shift in our lives.
So did you notice anything in particular that happened after December of 2012, these last three years since 2012, did you notice a shift in yourself and in your husband and the people that were coming to you? Did you find that the consciousness seemed to be elevated into people that were showing up?
I think there's a quickening. I think there's a real explosion in people not only having these experiences of awakened consciousness, but talking about them, feeling empowered to come out in public and write books about them. I mean, you know, people like J.D. Messinger. J.D. was a nuclear submarine officer. He was a chief executive of Ernst & Young in the Far East. He was a top corporate executive at Exxon. He was responsible for the cleanup of the Exxon Valdez disaster. And then he started writing a book that was written by some other energy other than him. And it totally pushed him onto a different path. Another gal in the book, Jessica Maxwell, was an adventure writer. She wrote about fishing and travel and everything. And she was driving home from her father's funeral and saw his face in the sky. And she spoke to her sister, who was 1,000 miles away, and said, and her sister asked her if she noticed anything strange. And they both had seen their father's face in the sky. And so that started her on the path of looking into what all the spirituality was, because she was about as far from spiritual or religious as it is possible to be.
Yes, I remembered reading that particular story, and it was, yeah, that was a real eye-opener about how it works with, you know, putting the projection of a face. Was it in the clouds? Was it a cloud face, I asked myself, or was it really just a holographic?
She told me it was like a hologram in the sky. It was not in the clouds.
Oh, wow. That's even better. That's even better. Well, tell us some more about some other people that you wrote about in this book. I love the way you're explaining the different people.
Okay. Let's take Suzanne Giesemann. Suzanne was a commander in the U.S. Navy. And when her daughter-in-law died by being struck by lightning, she and her husband went to a medium because they were looking for some way to get past their grief. And this medium told them things about themselves and their daughter that she had no way on earth of knowing. And so Suzanne, when she got out of the military, started writing a book about mediumship. And she was attending a class one day that a medium was giving that she was kind of reporting on. And the medium turned to her and said, "Why don't you give readings yourself?" And she turned around and she gave a reading to everybody in the room. And she was dead on accurate. And that totally blew her mind. And she's just never looked back.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Tell us some more. Let's pick one. How about Jessica Maxwell?
I just told you about Jessica. She was the one with the hologram in the sky.
That's right.
Greg Braden. What I like about Greg's story is, you know, he's a very well-known name in the sort of new consciousness, new age community. But unlike some of the other people in the book, he had what I would call an intellectual awakening. He was working for Martin Marietta, working on nuclear weapons programs, and he was on holiday in the Sinai Desert. He took a hike to be at the top of Mount Sinai at dawn as the sun was coming up, which, as you know, is where Moses was supposedly received the Ten Commandments. And as the sun came up, it was just so overwhelming to him. And he asked himself, if I died in this moment, would I be at peace with what I had accomplished in my life? And everything in his being welled up and shouted, no. And so he went back and he resigned from Martin Marietta. And he embarked on a new career of exploring the ancient wisdom traditions, and specifically of finding the correlations between the ancient traditions and modern science, and drawing those connections. You know, when I look at my bookshelves, and I have thousands of books, you wonder why we need yet another book. And My understanding is that you just never know what's going to resonate with someone. And that's why you need so many different approaches to teaching these concepts. Some people resonate with the more shamanic, aboriginal ideas. Other people are much more cerebral and resonate with the more scientific, objective ideas. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to the primacy of consciousness and the nature of reality as being generated by our thoughts and our consciousness.
Did you have someone that had like a near-death experience where they, you know, completely did a 180 and changed their life because they either died and came back or came real close to it?
Oh, there were a number of them. I think I have two favorites. One is David Bennett. Dave was a deep sea diver, and he was caught in a storm with 20-foot waves, and it totally, catapulted him, and he ended up drowning. And as he was kind of sinking into the depths, he had a near-death experience where he went through the tunnel, he had the life review, and as he reports it, in this life review, he not only saw his own life through his own eyes, but he also saw his life through the eyes of everybody he interacted with, especially everybody whom he had harmed or insulted or angered or hurt in some way. And he then found himself kind of miraculously back on board ship, resuscitated. But this remained with him so powerfully, that this feeling of the light and the love, and also realizing how he had hurt other people, that he changed his life and he became a spiritual teacher.
Miriam, that he may have received a walk-in at that time? Did that occur to you or to him to ask that question?
I don't think so, because there seems to be a kind of a continuity of consciousness. Often when people have walk-ins, they kind of forget the previous existence, whereas he was actually building on his memories of his previous existence and trying to make amends.
Yeah, okay. So, what are your ideas or their ideas about death and the afterlife? Did several of them, you know, get to express what they thought the afterlife was about?
The afterlife seems to be the period of R&R and refocusing, assimilating the experiences of this life, and eventually planning what you're going to do next time around. It is different from the normal idea of heaven and hell and retribution and stuff like that, in that there is no judgment on the other side. You are your own judge. Everyone else surrounds you with unconditional love. And when you see your own actions, that's when you take on board the lessons in order to build a different platform for your next experience. And somebody like Anita Morjani, who is an Indian lady from Hong Kong, she was admitted to hospital in a coma with stage 4 lymphatic cancer. She was so ill that the doctors had no hope whatsoever for her. She had such wounds from her lymph glands bursting through her skin that normally she would have needed plastic surgery to close them. And she left her body, went through the tunnel. She met her father and another friend who had died from cancer on the other side. and had the life review. And one thing that she understood in the life review was that she got sick because she did not love herself enough. That she just, the light and the love, the sweetness had gone out of her life. And she was given the choice of coming back or not coming back, as is the case in many of the stories of near-death experiences. And she decided that she wanted to come back because she wanted to share this message with the reader. And in her message, I'm just looking at this book, at her message, it says, "I tell people you are already everything that you're trying to attain. You already know the truth within you. And it's really, really simple. You just need to learn to love yourself again." That's such an important message, because we too often equate self-love with selfishness. And it's the farthest thing from the truth. Because when you love yourself, you respect yourself. You appreciate the qualities that you bring to this lifetime. You are empowered to express the best in you. That's what self-love is about. It's not about selfishness.
I totally agree with that. So many people just don't want to take the time to look at that either. They do think that some way, somehow, they've been programmed through bloodlines or through churches or through other teachers to let them be who they need to be. I totally agree with that. So do we have a purpose in life that we have to find?
My understanding of it, and I have to say that my understanding is a work in progress. It's continuously evolving, as I hope we all are, is that we come to this life with a set of talents, a set of potentials. And these potentials can be triggered awake by events in our life, by interactions in our life, or by asking for them. That the talents that we bring are, in many cases, derived from the strands that we pull in from previous lifetimes. And I use the word previous here with caution, because, as I'm sure you know, there's a big question about the nature of time and space, that it's all kind of hanging out there in one big mass, and that sequential time is just something that we need to experience here in order to make sense of comparisons and of our lives.
So is there a common theme in the messages to the reader of this book?
There are a number of common themes. One is that we all have access to intuition, to connection. It's just a question of opening to it or developing it. Some people, in fact, most people, have it as their birthright from childhood, but kind of turn it off because we've been, as Don Miguel Ruiz would say, domesticated by our parents and our teachers, to only accept the evidence of our eyes and of measurement. Aboriginal, indigenous societies still have this direct connection to intuition, and they have abilities that we have as well, but we have turned off. The sort of sixth sense, the second sight. In many cases, it runs in families, probably because it was accepted by, you know, mother to grandmother to great grandmother and so on, and passed down as being acceptable in our line. You know, we come from a family of healers or wise women.
So, what is your hope for this book?
my hope is that it will give people a context for acknowledging the experiences that they've already had, and for understanding how we are all connected. When we, you know, you hear people say we're all connected, and what does that mean anyway? When you read some of these stories, you get a much more visceral understanding of what it means to actually be able to tap into the field of consciousness, tap into other dimensions. And these are abilities that can be developed. And the best way to develop them is by going into the silence, through meditation, through walking in nature, through communing, through turning off the noise of the outside world from time to time, so that you can actually hear yourself think and actually hear the universe whispering to you.
You know, what I really love about this book is that it's concise and it keeps your attention. It's a good book for people to get if they're taking an airplane trip, because you could probably read the whole book in an hour and a half. You know,
that's
an hour and a half flight or 2 hours, you can read the entire book. And it's really self-fulfilling with giving you up spiral energies on every page. So I would strongly recommend our listeners to go on your website, www.rcreview.com.
That's NC. NC for New Consciousness.
NC. I'm sorry. NCreview.com. And I know that those that will pick up the book and read it will really glean some wonderful information from it. And at this time, I would like to turn the show over to the switchboard. I know that Ariel doesn't have the switchboard. But Ariel, if you would like to say something or comment, you can at this time.
Well, I was listening and thinking that besides that one, the incident where that your husband experienced with his friend coming, did everything change in that moment, or was there any kind of a build-up to that?
It was progressive, I should say, and it scared the heck out of him, because he started being able to see things about people in the street and people he knew. He had one friend who he saw at a crossroads in a vision. He saw at a crossroads between the hospital and the cemetery, and he just knew that he had to tell that friend to get to a doctor. And when he did go, he found that he had 3 coronary arteries totally blocked, and one was partially blocked, and he would have been dead in days.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's...
That got our attention.
That would. I mean, it's confirmation and at the same time, knowing that you did something to help someone like that. Wow.
That can be a scary thing, you know, and it's important to be able to keep control of it. And it took him a while to you know, he shut it down first because it was too overwhelming. And then he kind of opened the door a crack, so to speak, because he uses a lot of intuition in his practice. But it's a very powerful tool, and you need to learn how to use it and master it.
And when did this, what was his time frame? How long ago did this happen for him?
This was about 18 years ago.
Oh, so he's had, a lot of time to get comfy with that and
right.
Good.
And don't forget the times have changed. You know, 20 years ago it was really, really weird, but nowadays it's not that weird.
Right. Well, I think a lot of people are finding that, you know, yesterday's weird is today's commonplace.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
You were going to say?
No, it was Julia Cameron I heard talk at the INETS conference, and she said, what was the word she used? Something like paranormal is the new normal.
Well, that's pretty true. And more people are open to it. You know, I mean, more people are openly talking about UFO sightings and you know, things that we would think of 20 years ago as, you know, high strangeness, keep your mouth shut. And they're just not doing it anymore. You know, there's a...
Well, that's because of the internet, because you cannot hide the truth anymore.
Right. Knowing how to sift through all of that is another skill. But
that's such a good point. It really is. That's another point I always want to make, that you have to use your discernment. And that's part of this intuition thing, the gut feel. You can tune in and you know what sounds crazy and what sounds true.
Right, right. And so since this awakening, changing of path 18 years ago, you mentioned that you do readings for people as well? Work with individuals?
Actually, I do, but I never mentioned it. You must be psychic too. No, mostly I read and review books and films, and I'm the publisher of this magazine, New Consciousness Review.
So you really have a broad view on what is being produced these days.
I do.
I mean, it's almost all topics of consciousness. I mean, yeah, you're kind of...
Yes, everything from alternative health to... social activism, to spirituality, to alternative history.
And you have a radio show as well?
I do. It's the Miriam Knight Show, and all of my podcasts are on my website as well as iTunes and Stitcher and all the good places.
Oh, great, great. Because I have a feeling that you've got a lot more information, experience, expertise, and stories than what is in your current book.
I have been around the block a few times, and yes, there's another book.
Yeah. What
another
about?
Book
I mean, you've lived on four different continents, and how would you assess the consciousness level of different cultures? Do you find there's an equal rising, or some people taking the lead culturally with consciousness?
I think it has a different expression in different countries. So, for example, in Latin America, especially Brazil, there's a deep connection to spirit. Spiritism is very, very widespread, it's a more shamanic approach to spirituality. In England, it's more, you know, in the tradition of Arthur Conan Doyle and the spiritualist movement. It's a kind of a very well-bred sort of spirituality. In America, it's really gone. We're such a big country that there are many different strands to it, of course. Mm-hmm. But we've got the whole New Age scene. We've got the UFO ET scene. We've got the alternative health practices and conspiracy theories and so on, or conspiracy facts. And... you know, there are many different strands that interweave. So it's really the broad range of human understanding and experience.
Well, like you said, there's so many people, and I guess Americans are not are well known for speaking and being opinionated. So that it comes to the surface more, and I think in some countries, I know people that I've had sessions with that were living in the United Kingdom or in other countries. You kind of have to. It's like being here 20 years ago. You have to know who you're talking to and be careful what you say, judging according to who you're talking to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Completely agree with that, yeah.
So, as I said before, I don't have access to the switchboard, but if anyone on the switchboard has a comment or question for Miriam, just dial, if you're not already on the phone, if you're just listening on your computer, you can call 917-889-8292 and then press 1 when you are prompted to do so, so we know that you want to come on the air with a comment or a question. And Vanya, Claudia, do we have anybody that has already done that procedure?
Hi. No, we don't have any current callers in the queue.
Okay.
With the question.
Okay. So once again, if you do want to ask a question, the number is 917-889-8292, and then press 1 when you're prompted. So, Miriam, is there another topic or an area that you would like to venture into? We have a starseed audience, people that are very awake, highly conscious, and you couldn't say anything, I think, that would shock any of our listeners.
I'm not really out to shock anyone, but maybe just give them a poke in the ribs. Maybe the story of Paul Von Ward. The thing about Paul is he's written his recent books are Children of a Living Universe and We've Never Been Alone, A History of Extraterrestrial Intervention. Now, Paul's history is what's so fascinating. He was born in a sharecropper's cabin in Florida. He went to university. He was attending an evangelical church, became a pastor, a minister of the church. But when he went to university, he really started asking some inconvenient questions, and he met some speakers that totally opened up his mind to other forms of belief. And then in World War II, he went into the Navy, and he was about to be given the command of a PT boat when he felt that he really wasn't cut out for the life of the military hierarchy, and ended up going into the Foreign Service, where he became a career diplomat. And when he came back to Washington and was working in the State Department, he actually contributed a chapter of a book very critical of Kissinger's role in the State Department and was politely invited to leave. So the thing about Paul is that he has always had this inquiring mind. He's always questioned the status quo. He's questioned the received wisdom, and he's looking for the meaning behind things. And he's just become such a towering intellect in the whole pushing forward the notion of extraterrestrial contact and our place within the family of planets and star systems. And what I like, I'm going to read you his message. It's that let's get over the barriers separating us and bring back a level of mutual learning and mutual support. To choose a Navy metaphor, we are all steering a course from day to day, and even though we may not know the final destination, we must fix our gaze on the horizon, take our best guess, and head for the stars.
That's great. I like that.
Yeah.
Take our best guess and head for the stars.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there has to be a certain amount of courage and daring, especially for someone in his position. Did he actually, I mean, he worked as a foreign diplomat?
Yes, he was a career senior diplomat in the Foreign Service.
Wow.
Yeah. He's written many books. But you know, he's an intellect who came to this through the power of reason, whereas other people come to it through either revelation or a near-death experience, some traumatic event. And others, you know, were born with it and never lost it. So there are so many different ways that people get awakened.
Oh, that's true. Like you said, there are as many different ways as there are people. But one thing for sure is that once you wake up, you can't really go back to sleep.
Absolutely.
Even if you think you want to. Yeah. And there are a lot of star seeds that, as you mentioned, at an early age realized that they were different or they had some ability that others didn't have, and they shut it down. But that's just a temporary thing, because eventually it gets to be so loud that you can't keep your back turned on it anymore. That's a common theme, I think, among star seeds, at least to, you know, in our experience. A lot of star seeds try to be normal like everybody else, and they know they're not. And sooner or later, the day comes when you realize that you can't deny your true identity and your gifts and your purpose, or you'll be like, you know, the man sitting on top of Mount Sinai, and the big answer is, no, you haven't done what you came here to do.
Yeah.
Well, Vanya, Claudia, do we have any callers yet?
Hi. We do not have any callers with questions at this time, no.
Okay. Just wanted to check. I don't know how you can let me know if we do. I'll just check once more before we wrap it up.
Okay, so, I'm here.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Do you practice psychology anymore?
No. When I did my master's thesis in psychology, I had to read hundreds of articles, and I was overwhelmed by the amount of drivel that I had to read. And I thought, no, I don't want to be a psychologist. I suppose that's going to earn me hate mail, but no, I went into hospital administration.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, you know, if it doesn't resonate with you to go along because others expect you to, that's really going to come back to bite you. So I'm glad that you followed your heart with that. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
That's what we talk about, you know, tuning into your gut feel. Too often we're just guided by what people expect of us instead of having any real sense of who we are and who we want to be. And that's one of the things that I think one of the messages in the book is to learn who you really are. And it, as Anita Morjani said, we have infinite power. She had the power to heal herself from stage 4cancer within days. And when she came back, she knew she had that power. And the doctors were absolutely astonished. And doctors came from around the world to examine her because they couldn't believe it.
Wow. How inspiring. And, you know, I mean, it's true. We all do have that capacity, but we've been trained that, you know, well, who do you think you are? You're nobody special, or you can't do that, or anybody that says they can do that is just, a charlatan or some kind of a, con artist or something. But truly, everyone has the capacity, the potential, and all you have to really do is just accept it and quit denying it. And we had a guest, a former guest, who was pointing out the three things that keep us kind of stuck and that was judgment and believing what others, the rules that others tell you. And I can't remember the third thing. Lavendar, do you remember? Judgment, the rules, and it'll come to me in a minute. But it's so true. You know, from childhood, we're taught what the rules are.
Yeah, or you're not good enough.
Right, right. And then you get to where you believe that, and it's basically putting you in a straitjacket.
Well, it's worse than that, because when you believe it, that's what you are anchoring in your life, anchoring in your experience. Whether we believe good or whether we believe bad about ourselves, that's what we're going to be experiencing. And that's what just comes through from all of these stories, the enormous power of our belief system.
It is true. Yeah. As Lavendar often says, you are what you're conscious of. So if you're conscious of limitations and lack of worth and all of that, then that's exactly what you'll be. But it's just as easy to choose what you're going to think about and what thought you're going to take. It's like, am I going to think that? No. Let's go with the one that is closer to the truth and more resonant with the higher self.
Yeah, this whole thing about choice is really central, because this gets back to the whole notion of the power of now and dear old Eckhart Tolle, that we only have this moment in which to make our choice, that will make the choices that will create our future. And so we really need to be so conscious about what we're thinking now, how we are acting now, and also to take action. It's not enough to know what the right thing to do is. It's so important to do the right thing. And the right thing, you know, is what is best for us, what is best for the greater community, for the planet. Now, that's another theme that comes across the book, especially when people come back from a near-death experience. They, when they're changed profoundly, they realize that they must give back to the greater good, that is what will complete them as a complete human being.
I kind of had the reminded of the story of Ebenezer Scrooge, where he was shown through someone else's eyes, you know, the history of his life, and that was kind of an awakening of a type as well, kind of paralleled one of the stories that you were talking about.
Yeah, very true.
So, Lavendar, do you have anything to add before we wrap it up?
No, but if you have any other books or things that you want to bring to us in the future, we'll be happy to have you back on the show, Miriam.
Thank you. Okay, stay tuned for a year from now.
Do you have another book in the works?
I do.
Well, that's great. Now, once again, your website is ncreview.com.
Yes, it's New Consciousness Review, which is ncreview.com. And I'd love for people to just sign up for a subscription to my magazine. It's free, and it's really fun and full of good things.
Well, that sounds wonderful. And we do thank you so much for coming on the show this evening and sharing your stories and your wisdom with our audience.
I'm so pleased to have been with you, and I was fascinated to listen to the news at the beginning. I'll have to tune into you regularly.
Well, that would be great. Yeah, Anastasia brings a lot of things that you just don't hear on the mainstream, and there's things that matter to our audience, the conditions of the earth and the you know, this solar system, as well as some human interest things. So, yeah, we have that every week. And we have a lot of fascinating guests, and we would love to have you come back, as you are one of them.
Thank you.
We are going to wrap up for this evening, and thank you so much, Miriam. Once again, it is ncreview.com.
And we thank all of you for listening. We will be here again next week, hopefully with electricity on my end. So until then, have a great week. With, I think, Lavender, aren't there like 4 or 5 planets at galactic degree right now? She didn't hear me. Well, there are. There are 4 or 5 planets at galactic degree, and I don't know what that's going to look like, but it's definitely going to cause some good changes. So with that, until next week, everyone, thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much, Miriam, for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.